Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
You're listening to the Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
This is Paul Hawksby.
And Charlie Baker.
And this is the H&J Daily, featuring some of the best bits of this afternoon's show in the podcast. Well, we had a bit of a Sheffield flavour.
And it did go a Sheffield flavour.
Got very Sheffield, very musical.
And it was off the rails, Paul, quite
it
a lot, did. Of, quite
it got,
a lot of the
it
show.
It got a touch loose at times, as you may gather if you listen to this. But Joe Elliott joined us from Def Leppard.
Yeah,
Big Sheffield United fan. Then we crossed the city. We went to Wednesday. John McClure is the lead singer of Reverend and the Makers. He's off to the playoff final, of course, this weekend.
Yeah.
But they were both on good form. We had a chat with them. Do you have the World Watercress Eating Champion? I think we should sling him in.
Put him in, yeah. He was
Glenn
great,
Walsh,
wasn't he? Yeah,
15
of course.
Times, 15 in a row.
You know.
And
the greats, yeah, the greats, Paul, they have more time to eat the crest. They just look.
Of course they do. Know.
The and first, finders keepers came up a lot, Paul.
Yeah, we talked about the stuff you'd found on the floor after Sam Allardyce found a fiver at West Ham the other day. And it took us into a daytime quiz mode. And anyway, you'll hear it all. It all got a bit weird. This is it. This is Paul Hawksby and Charlie Baker with you through until four here on TalkSport. Where this afternoon, Charlie, tell us what's coming up.
Coming up over the next 3 hours, how Newcastle got ahead of schedule and will salute 15-time World Watercress Eating Champion Glenn Walsh. That's not even Charlie's choice, Paul.
I know.
Not even West Country Corner.
It's not West Country Corner. It's just Sport in the Raw.
Yeah. Sport in the Raw.
Beautiful.
Raw Cress.
I'm not a big fan of the cress. I'll have it in a sort of in an egg mayonnaise sandwich under duress. Cress under duress, which is my new series.
Oh, what a great
new series on Channel 5.
Sounds fantastic.
Yeah, Alan Duress, the former France international.
Sweating, eating cress in the Sahara Desert. You know,
that's it. Yeah. You know, okay. Well, we're
absolutely freezing in the Arctic.
We'll work it up over the next 3 hours.
Some cress arrives.
Yeah, that's right. Or in a shark cage.
Yeah,
you're in a shark cage in South. It's a great white trying to bang
in
its
South
way
Africa,
through.
Yeah, yeah.
And someone hands you a bit of cress.
A bit of cress. You've got to eat the cress.
Well, I'll tell you what. I've watched worse. I've watched worse on British TV. It is 8 minutes past one. Good afternoon, everyone. Good afternoon, Charlie.
I watch a programme called Port Protection, about port protection in
Pork
Alaska.
Pork Protection.
Port Protection.
Oh, I was going to say.
In Alaska.
Yeah.
Oh, I love it, Paul. Absolutely.
What's that on Discovery?
It's five series. One of these things. It's on Disney. Five series of it, right?
Yeah.
And every episode is exactly the same.
What is it?
But you just... So there's 36 people live on this island in Alaska.
Mm.
And they have to go and shoot and hunt for all their food and,
wow,
like, you know, fish for everything and shoot deer and bear, and they eat bear and they catch.
I'd like that.
No, it's good, Paul. They never see the bear be shot.
Okay.
You know, but and also, they'll often
be out. Oh, that's all right, then.
they'll be out and they'll go, was that a bear? And they'll get their gun ready and then they'll go to a break and then they'll come back after the break. And every episode, it wasn't a bear.
Oh, okay. Well, it sounds like a winner.
It's a great show.
Yeah. Port Protection.
Port Protection.
Alaska.
I think it's called Lawless Island now.
Right.
They changed titles for it, you know. But there are lots of laws on this island because obviously there's 36 people live there.
Yeah.
No hospital or anything, you know.
Right.
Anyway, that's nothing to do with sport.
Okay, well, thank you, Charlie.
I don't know how I got onto that.
How did you find that? At what point was there nothing on? When TV's Port Protection, the whole five series suddenly came.
I like a programme to be as bleak as possible.
Okay.
That's what I like. In a documentary, people...
Did you watch Spurs versus Brentford? Yeah.
I did think of you that day, Paul. Like, 1-0
up, 3-1 down.
And he scored a free kick.
Yeah,
and you've been going on it nearly.
Not direct. Not a direct free kick.
But all season, you've been going on him. That was for you, that one, Paul.
Well, we had a game. We had our usual game. Harry lined it up and we played into the wall or over the bar, which is always. We have a little wager on the side.
Yeah.
Into the wall, over the bar. Rarely round the post. Normally into the wall, over the bar.
That's lovely, isn't it?
So he's accurate. He just happens to have a wall in front of him. Accurate-ish, anyway.
Yeah.
But anyway, no, it was a lovely finish, but it wasn't direct, so we're not counting it as Harry Kane free kick.
Do you think that's him off, Paul?
I don't know.
What's your gut say?
I think he'll be there next season.
Do you?
Yeah, I do. I do think he'll be there next season. I think that the hope will be, I mean, unless he looks to sort of force his way out, and I don't think anybody would blame him for that, but I think he will be.
Tough Premier League next year.
Yeah, we were saying that yesterday. We're
insane levels next year.
Looking about 8 or 9
a
teams.
Resurgent Liverpool, Newcastle coming with money to spend.
Yeah.
Man City just absolutely unbeatable.
Yeah.
Arsenal will want to strengthen in the summer.
Villa
Man United, great
got a
management.
Coach.
Villa got a good coach. You know.
Yeah.
Well,
it's going to.
I fear for Spurs, Paul, if they don't keep Kane.
It's going to get tougher. So we shall see. We're going to talk Newcastle this afternoon. The game last night was a weird one, wasn't it? Because obviously, you know, Newcastle had plenty of chances. And
Leicester
just sort of, I mean, Dean Smith said it nearly worked. He sort of hang in there, keep it tight, and do a smash and grab. They nearly did with that Castagna chance at the end.
Great save.
But to be honest, a point really didn't do him any favours. Even losing last night wouldn't have massively changed the situation because of their goal difference.
Yeah.
They got 6 more goals on Everton going into the last day. And so point, you know,
didn't do
him a lot of favours. But
I think if you're an Everton fan and you were a couple of weeks ago, if you'd been offered, if you beat Bournemouth at home on the last day, you stay up, basically. You know, if you'd offered them that, I think they'd have bitten your hand off.
I mean, I used to go and watch Everton with my mate, and I've got a soft spot for him, and I'd love to see him do it. But there is something about Bournemouth. When they get going, Bournemouth, they play some nice stuff.
Yeah.
And they'll be playing with total freedom. And
I'm slightly
concerned for Everton. I shouldn't be, but I mean, they know what they've got to do. Just go and win the game, and they're going to have to do it without Dominic Calvert-Lewin, which is a blow. But I don't know. I could just see like Solanke and the guys all turning it on.
We've spoken to Sam Avery a lot on this
show. Well, we'll talk to Sam later in the week. Yeah, big Everton.
We've spoken to him a lot, and you do get the vibe from him a bit of it cannot carry on the way it's going because eventually it will go wrong and it will go badly wrong. Yeah. You know, it cannot carry on.
And it comes at a time, though, they've got a little bit of outside money coming in, we hear today. You know, a US company going to pump some money in, most of it on the new stadium, but I think there should be money to spend on players.
Yeah.
So it seems to be happening too often, this. They seem to be in this situation too often, don't they? So anyway, I'm sure we'll talk Everton as the week unfolds. A couple of things to get going on. We'll try and squeeze one of them in. Charlie's Choice. I found it on the floor.
Yes.
We didn't bother doing it yesterday because I knew Charlie was in today. Sam Allardyce. How often do you find a fiver on the touchline?
It was like he'd scored a goal.
Yeah.
It was like he kept them up.
Well, that bonus for keeping Leeds up is sort of retreating into the distance. So he'll get the money while he can, I would imagine. I
wonder whose fiver do you think it was?
I don't know. He offered it to the fourth official. Who on the touchline? It must have been one of the blokes, one of the hospitality people or somebody who works at the club.
Yeah.
Because no one's going out there with cash on them, are they? I mean,
Declan Rice
keeps a little fiver tucked inside his waistband.
Subs.
Of course, they have to pay the subs, don't they?
And he's getting a half, so he's going to pay his subs.
Yeah, that's true.
But he didn't offer it to the fourth official, surely.
Do you think Moisey has a big Tesco bag, says, oi, subs,
subs,
as they run out the dressing room, put your fivers in. That's a nice idea.
It'll be. Yeah, it'll be nice.
So I found it on the floor, whatever it was. It's pretty open-ended. It's Charlie's Choice.
50 I found on the floor once, Paul.
You found a 50?
50. I was working in a bar.
Wow.
In Fulham, in West London. And I was working, but it was 1 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
We were open till 3, and it was one of those grim Friday nights when everyone was on the Jaeger bombs on the floor there, Paul. £50 note. Do you know what?
Is this yours, mate? You didn't want to
know. I could have. But do you know what I thought, Paul?
No.
I'm on £7.50 an hour here.
Yeah.
That's a night's work. I'm having that.
Yeah, well,
put it in my pocket.
Fair enough,
lovely.
Charlie. Okay. May have been the life savings of an old lady who worked there as a cleaner. Old lady worked there as a cleaner. She was taking it round to her son, who's not well, so we could eat that night. Hope you're proud of yourself.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
Hawksby and Charlie Baker here on Talk Sport. You probably saw Big Sam found a fiver on the touchline at West Ham the other. It was West Ham, wasn't it?
Yeah. People found a lot of stuff on the floor.
I found it on the floor. Said Charlie Baker. What have they found on the floor, Charlie?
Hi, Paul and Charlie. I was once staying in a hotel in Cork. I moved a little table to get the ironing board out to sort out my shirt for the night and spotted a $20 note on the floor, moved the tail further, the table further to find a load more. I found $900 under the table.
Wow.
Stashed it in my suitcase, didn't mention it to the guys I was away with. Wow. Didn't want to waste it on drink. Well, what else are you going to do with it? It was just before Christmas. Changed it on the way home. Took my family shopping. There we are.
$900.
$900. Amazing. What a holiday.
In a hotel, I suppose he could have handed it into reception, couldn't he? But I take it the people there had gone. Had they gone? Yeah,
well,
I guess they'd gone.
Nose room it was, Paul, wasn't it? But yes. You know, that's the thing, isn't it? You know, I think if you find it, it's finders keepers, Paul.
But is that,
finders keepers, is that, losers weepers.
Why do you have to say it in a West Country accent?
Funnier.
That would be, yeah. Has there ever been a kind of daytime game show called Finders Keepers? There should have been.
I bet there was. There should have been. Good though, wouldn't it? Yeah.
You could do it in that accent.
You think Finders Keepers?
That's it.
Finders Keep. We could write one, Paul. Finders Keepers, goalkeepers only.
Okay.
Finders.
No, that's a. You're not going to.
Finders Keepers.
No, stop it. That's enough. I was at. Where's it gone? I think you will find that was my 50. Oh, that's Dave in Tunbridge, yeah.
That's because I found a fish.
It was the cab money to get me to the hospital to be at my wife's side for the birth of our first child. Oh, no. I had to walk and I missed the big moment. Cheers, Charlie. Oh, wow. I told you that 50. Yeah, you feel guilty now, don't you? That night in that club.
What was Charlie's 50 for exactly? Yeah, I found.
Yes.
Not me, but my brother. While working at a local... I don't understand this story. Working at the local slightly dodgy pallet yard.
Right. What's dodgy about a pallet yard?
I don't know. Sweeping up after school. Went in to ask his boss for a promised pay rise. Mm. He basically laughed him out of the office. As he trudged out, he noticed a new crisp 50 on the floor.
Right.
Of course, he pocketed it quickly and celebrating by buying himself a goat.
Okay.
What is this? I need more information on this. He bought himself a goat that weekend. He did get said pay rise a few weeks later, so all good all round. That's Paul in knots.
Bought himself a goat.
Richard Stilgo did Finders Keepers.
Oh, did he?
I wonder if he came up with it.
You know his son, don't you?
I do.
Maybe we can get some old tapes of it.
I wonder if we can find the Finders Keepers theme tune.
Yeah.
I'm
guessing that Richard Stilgo wrote it. I imagine he insisted. He insisted. Anyway, talking of music now, we're going to play you a very familiar bit of music. If you're a Def Leppard fan, even if you're not, it was a huge song. But a different treatment of it. We'll talk more about it with Joe Elliott from the band shortly. But have a listen to this. I got to feel it in my blood. Whoa. I need your touch, don't need your love. Whoa. Of course, he's Animal by Def Leppard. Together at last with the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra.
Yeah, wow, why not?
Wow.
Well, I bet they didn't think that in 1976, starting out in Sheffield.
Hello, Joe. Good afternoon.
Afternoon.
Hello, geezers. How are you?
Yeah,
pretty well,
good.
Thank you.
That must have been a real buzz to work with them. It must have been fantastic.
It was really something special. You know, it was in Abbey Road as well, that studio where that band recorded a lot of their work. And just watching them play with us was kind of a bit of a head trip, really, because you think about it, when they turn up to do a session, it's normally with people that have been dead 200 years.
Yeah.
Beethoven and Mozart and stuff like that, and there's little Def Leppard up on the balcony filming them, you know, playing along with our stuff. It was amazing.
How did it come about then, Joe?
Well, we'd got this album in the can called Diamond Star Halos that came out about a year ago. We recorded that in 2020 during the pandemic, remotely. In other words, we were all at our respective homes in California, the East Coast of America, Sheffield and Dublin.
Yeah.
And we glued it all together and it worked a treat, but we didn't want to release it into the pandemic. So the record company said to us, well, while we're sitting around waiting, do you fancy doing it again, but with the Royal Philharmonic doing some...
Wow.
reworks and whatever. So he said, as long as it's not just a greatest hits album with strings slapped on top, we can pick the songs. And yeah, we'll obviously there'll be some hits, but we're going to go deep tracks because we've got a lot of symphonic songs anyway, the way we've kind of orchestrated them with guitars and what have you. So it was a case of stripping them all back down to zero and building them up and writing string arrangements that would fit the song, and then maybe putting some instrumentation back in and maybe not. Some songs the band are in, others we completely turn them upside down.
I tell you, it'd make for an expensive tour if you're going to take the Royal Philharmonic on the road with you.
Big tour bus.
Yeah, it would. But, you know, the great thing is with classical musicians, unlike rock and rollers who have to just practice it all and learn it by, memorize it, these guys can actually read.
Yeah.
It's a bit like a newsreader that can read a story that they've got no knowledge of, but because they're fantastic readers, you think that they know everything about it. And these guys, they just see all the little squash dance on the bit of paper and they can play it.
Yeah.
And it works a treat. So we don't actually have to take the Royal Philharmonic on the road. We if we're playing in Los Angeles, we could use the LA Philharmonic. And if we're in London, we could use the Royal. But, you know, if we're saying in Australia, we could use the Sydney Philharmonic. You know, it's easy to do, really, in this day and age.
Yeah, classical musicians can really drink, though, as well, Joe. So I'd, watch that, you know. And
yeah, there is that.
I've never met a sober bass trombone player.
Really?
But my favourite joke at the moment is, have you seen the piccolo player's Porsche? Said, whatever.
Yeah, lovely stuff.
So, talking of a buzz, you played at Bramall Lane last night, is that right?
Yes, we did. Home of my newly promoted Blades. Yeah. We did sold that show at Bramall Lane. It was the first show of the European tour, the first one back, first stadium show back in 7 weeks. So, and we were filming it, and it was in Sheffield, so no pressure. You know what I mean? But it was great. It was really, really good. We had such a great time. The fans were louder than we were, and we were loud, you know. Yeah. But they were everything back to us. It wasn't that cold, and it didn't rain. And you know, for outdoor shows, that's a bonus.
You must have played there over the years, I would imagine, a good few times, have you?
No.
Oh, was that the first time you'd ever played there? Wow.
It was only the third ever gig there. I believe that the only two people that have ever played before is Bruce Springsteen and Rod Stewart.
Wow.
I've played on the pitch. I played in Bruce's testimonial in 1986, along with George Best and Archie Gemmell.
Wow.
I actually played in a charity game against Sheffield Wednesday and scored at the Kop End. But there was nobody there, so nobody saw it. That was the first time the band have played there.
On the next tour as well. You're playing at Wembley on the next tour, aren't you, as well? How many times have you played Wembley?
We've only ever played Wembley once, and that was a special guest for Queen at the Freddie Mercury Memorial Show.
Wow.
That 20th of April 1992, so what, 31 years ago? 32 years ago, sorry. 31 years ago. That's the only time we've ever played Wembley. So, yeah, we got Wembley on the 1st of July, and then we're up to Lytham on the 2nd, and then we've got Dublin on the 4th and Glasgow on the 6th, and then we've got a month off before we hit the States for a month.
Yes.
It's all go in Death
Leopard Land. Still the same buzz, Joe, and you do it never asleep at the wheel, as they say?
No, you know what? The buzz is better, actually, because I think there's a kind of a party that's just so in awe of the fact that you're still doing it all these years later. I think when you've got youth on your side and you just think it's never going to end, there comes a point where you might hit a certain age where you think, this is just absolutely a breeze and it's a blast to do, and long may it last. And we just ride the standing on the shoulders of giants is really what we're doing. You know, we see McCartney still doing the odd gig here and there. The Stones are still touring on occasions. And they're like 20 years older than us.
Yeah.
So if they can, we certainly can. So while we've got our health and we have a great following, why would we not want to do it? It's such a joy. It's all any of us wanted to do since we were kids.
You know? I mean, you have been great survivors as a band, haven't you? I mean, even sort of going back to Rick Allen, your drummer, having a car accident. I mean, for a band to survive that and come back, for him to still be a member of the band is amazing, really.
Yeah, well, it's a brotherhood, really. Hmm. You know, I mean, like, we're not musicians in the sense of like you have to pass a test to join the band. It's like, do you want to do this? And I'm the best musician in the world. It doesn't matter. I mean, Bob Dylan can't really sing, but he can write a song. You know what I mean? Yeah. And that you can say that about 1,000 musicians that make a great living because they come up with some tunes. But it was just the enthusiasm of doing it. And, you know, Rick had his accident. Steve passed away. And, you know, bless him, Steve Bond was at the gig last night, you know, and his younger brother. So we dedicated a song to them. And it's like a family, you know. This is just a bunch of kids from Sheffield, and then he expanded out to the honorary Yorkshireman that Phil is from Walthamstow and Belfast. And we just take this thing around the world, and we just very fortunately got a really strong fan base that want to see us play.
Yeah. And, well, look, what do you need next year, you think? I mean, the manager's done a very good job of getting, 38 getting points. Back up. Well, I mean, yeah, but I mean, you're going to need to strengthen. Yeah, yeah. It's that old thing of rewarding the people that got you there, but giving you enough strength to make sure you can stay there, I guess.
Yeah, there is that. I mean, you look at what Forest did. They bought like 2,000 players and had to figure it out, but they figured it out right towards the end. And that must have been really difficult for Steve Cooper. I think he did an amazing job. Yeah, look, the reality is if we can finish 17th, it'll be a result because we can stay in and build. Mm. I'd like to think we could do what Fulham and what Brentford have done. In fact, what we did first season up, when people were allowed in the stadiums, we finished like 10th or something. It was when the pandemic kicked in and we didn't have the 12th man. Teams like us that don't have a depth of squad, of, you know, that deeper squad strength, we're always going to struggle if we haven't got the crowd behind us. That was shown so obviously at the Wednesday game against Peterborough.
Yeah.
4-0 down. And, you know, Peterborough players have never known the atmosphere that there was at Hillsborough. And if we can create the same atmosphere at Bramall Lane, maybe that will help us a little bit, you know. But we could do with a few players, like Erling Haaland, for example.
Well, if the tour goes well, maybe you can give him a sub. That would be good.
A few more tickets.
Are you going to be cheering on Wednesday? You want him to win the playoff?
Yeah, you know what? We don't sab our bass players on Wednesday night. So, I mean, he took one for the team last night playing at Bramall Lane. You know? But, you know, listen, it's Sheffield. I'm not one of those kind of guys that hates the opposition that like some people do. It's not in my DNA to be that kind of guy. So, of course, I want – it's great for Sheffield. You know, there's nothing more I'd like to see than both United and Wednesday in the Premiership. Us top, them second.
Yeah.
But still, you know, in there. You know, I've never been the kind of guy that hates the opposition team in my home birth town. You know, yeah. I mean, I don't live here anymore, but still support them. Yeah. So, yeah, I think, you know, South Yorkshire derby between Wednesday and Barnsley, it's going to be your house, because half of Yorkshire is going to be down in London and there'll be burglars everywhere.
You know? Well, good to talk to you, Joe. All the best with the album and the tour. Thanks very much
for
joining
you, guys.
Us.
Take care. It.
Thanks, Joe.
Yeah, there we are. There's Joe Elliott there from Def Leppard. The album's called Drastic Symphonies. That's Def Leppard with the London Philharmonic Orchestra. And as Charlie said, they're touring right around the UK and all around Europe and then off to the States. So still
imagine
going,
that, mate.
Still going strong.
Wembley Stadium one night and then the following night, Lytham St. Anne's. Straight up to Blackpool up the road on the motorway in the back of a bus. Beautiful.
That's right. To Lytham. You think they'll go up in the back? You think they're still using the same transit they did when they started?
Train transit van.
Protective of that transit.
Few messages. Joe's gone, but a few.
Oh, sorry.
Lots of people saying how much they love the band and how much they've loved seeing them over the years. But also, the House Martins have also played Bramall Lane because Paul Heaton's a blade. That's nice, isn't it?
That's from
Jennifer, Alison, Philippa. Sue,
yeah,
Deborah,
quite a lot of
Annabelle
them
too.
Quite a lot of them sent you. Well done, Charlie.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
Paul Hawksby and Charlie Baker here on Talk Sport. We Charlie and I thought we'd come up with a great title for a daytime quiz: Finders Keepers. Unfortunately, Richard Stilgo got there first.
And others.
Had good old Dave sent it to us.
Dave Dixon.
Thank you, Dave. He sent us all four theme tunes to Finders Keepers, and it's kind of we'll play them to you later. Don't touch that dial, eh? I can't wait.
It's trailing ahead, Paul. It's really, really good.
So, I don't know if you've been following the saga. Have you listened to Andy Brassel on Trans Europe Express with Danny or with us on a Monday with his bite sized European roundup? You may be aware that Juventus were docked 15 points back in January.
Mm-hmm.
And put them outside the Champions League places. Then they got their points back on appeal. Which put them in the Champions League places. And now they've lost 10 of the points again, which has taken them
Absolutely crazy.
Out of the Champions League. What a way to run a ballroom, as Peter Cook once said.
Exactly. For them, it's weird for them, but for teams around them who were in and out of the Champions League sides.
Well, exactly. Milan have sort of hung in there, but they easily could have, they could have thought, well, what's the point? And toppled down. Anyway, let's chat now to Daniele Fisichella, Italian football expert. Hi, Daniele.
Hey, Daniele.
Hi, Paul. Hi, Chadley.
This is such a mess, isn't it? It wasn't completely the Italian FA's fault. I mean, it wasn't the Olympic Committee got involved, and it's become very messy. But it's not a good look for Italian football, is it?
It is a decision that makes everyone unhappy. Well, apart if you are Lazio, who, by the way, now are qualified for the Champions League by default.
Mm.
But yes, of course, it does. Made a bit of a mockery of Italian Serie A this season because it has compromised results, the challenge for top four, but also for relegation. And the absurdity of everything is that the decision came last night, a few minutes before Juventus were due to play at Empoli. And can you imagine being on the dressing room and knowing, by the way, we got docked 10 points and now we're just going to have to go out and win the next three games for the hope to be in the Champions League. By the way, Juventus got trashed last night 4-1 by Empoli. It was really embarrassing for them. But the same manager, Allegri, in the post-match interview said, well, finally, we got a decision on this because it has been unbearable for us to think about all the consequences of this minus 15, then plus 15, and now the other, decision that came on last night. But this has been a big issue in Italy, and not only with the sporting justice, but with the justice system overall. And the problem is that probably we still haven't seen the end of this.
Wow. So, I mean, you're expecting another appeal, are you? And so what would that go into next season? Nothing's going to change before the end of this season, I wouldn't think.
There is the possibility that Juventus is going to appeal last night's decision by going to the Olympic Committee again. We need to wait for the motivations of their conviction that they're going to be published in 20 days' time, and then Juventus will decide. Now, it is very important to stress that the points deducted were 10 because the prosecutor said it publicly. He wanted a deduction that made possible that Juventus didn't play will not play in Europe next season. So at the beginning of the trial, they asked for a 9 points deduction because back then 9 points would have seen them outside of the top six. And now they became 10 because of that. So obviously that makes it very difficult for Juventus supporters to accept it. However, on the 15th of June, there is another trial that is going to start, and that is linked to the wages that were not paid and not declared fully by Juventus, obviously with the implication with their stock market, etc.
Mm.
Now, the decision of the judges, and that's going to be the first trial, of course, the first degree of decision, can impact next season. So Juventus might well start next season with some point deductions unless they settle, and maybe they settle for a minus 3, minus 4, we'll see. And in all of that, there is still UEFA decision hanging on there. UEFA will have, obviously, he'll say, and might want to exclude Juventus from the European competition, maybe for a couple of seasons running.
Now, a couple of stories out of Napoli. Luciano Spalletti, who's just delivered the Serie A title to the club after many years, looks like he's on his way out. Aurelio De Laurentiis, the president of the club, wants to make a change. On the face of it, this seems like a crazy decision. Apparently, there were tensions between the manager and the owner earlier in the season, despite what happened. But a couple of names in the frame, Antonio Conte and Luis Enrique, we hear today. Well, who's the most likely, do you think?
As well as names like Rafa Benitez and Thiago Motta. Well, it's all up in the air at the moment. What we know for sure is Spalletti is going to leave, but the name of the successor is not yet clear. Spalletti and Aurelio De Laurentiis, they've never been very close. And last season, actually, in April, when Napoli were in danger of not qualifying for Europe, De Laurentiis thought about sacking Spalletti. Then this season, things went completely in the other way. It was a great performance, almost a sporting miracle, Napoli. But there's always been a little bit tension, a little bit of friction, and things gone really, really cold after that elimination from the Champions League. Now, Spalletti wants to be more involved in the running of the club, in the decision, in the transfer, etc. De Laurentiis is a totalitarian president. He wants to decide pretty much everything, but we need to admit that both have been extremely successful at what they've been doing, but probably because of such a big difference in their characters, they're not meant to work together.
I mean, he'd be a man in demand, Spalletti, but I think he says he wants a break. He wants a bit of a sabbatical, so I don't think he'll be walking into a club next year, but who knows, Daniel Levy? and just finally, Kim Min-jae, the South Korean defender, who's had a brilliant season at Napoli.
Excellent season.
He's wanted by Manchester United, apparently. He's got to go off and do his little mini national service the way that Sonny did, just like a 3-4 weeker. Yep. But then he returns, and the word is that Manchester United are in the box seat. What are you hearing?
It's very likely that Kim Min-jae is going to leave Napoli in the summer. The fee, they're talking about 59 million euros. So it's much more than what Napoli paid Fenerbahce last summer. They played around 20 million euros. So obviously it's a massive gain for them. And probably this is also the base of the disagreements between Spalletti and De Laurentiis. You know, we thought Napoli were not a selling club because they don't need to sell financially. They're extremely viable. And in the summer, they've done a lot of good business. So their wage bill is not huge. But apparently, everyone has a price in Napoli, you know, and maybe even the likes of Osimhen and Lobotka if the right offer comes. But when it comes for Kim Min-jae, I think he's been by far the best defender in Serie A this season. He's very quick, very technical, strong. He's really helped Spalletti's side to build from the back. And when he wasn't there, like in the Champions League against Milan, in the second leg, they actually really, really missed it in the construction of the ball. So a great coup for Napoli to get him on board. But I think that's, you know, a little bit of the history of Serie A. We can't keep hold of talents for too long. Napoli are already looking for the replacement, probably a young Italian defender, which obviously will have to be selected by the new manager. But as far as Manchester United supporters are concerned, this is a very good buy. It's an intelligent buy. It is a young player that, you know, even in the Champions League with Napoli, when Napoli were flying, demonstrated all his pedigree.
Good to talk to you, Daniele. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much, Dixon.
Daniele Fisichella, the Italian football expert. And a lot of players were looking at him when he was playing in Turkey and no one quite made the move. Everyone could see his potential, including, of course, Spurs. Apparently the word was that Sonny had been saying, you've got to buy this guy, he's brilliant.
Now
he's a £50 million player. But I'm sure they weren't the only club that that didn't jump at the chance to sign him for about £15 million. Anyway.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
Is John McClure from Reverend the Makers.
Letter to my 21-year-old self. Absolutely beautiful new record.
It's a daunting thought, isn't it, doing that?
Yeah, writing to yourself.
It's good for you, isn't it?
It's good. Let yourself off as a younger person. You make mistakes, don't you? You know, you get anxious about all sorts of things as a younger person.
Yeah.
As you get older, you realise don't really matter. I think it's a great record.
Okay, good. Excellent. Well, as I say, it's a bit of a Sheffield special today musically. We had a chat with Joe Elliott from Def Leppard earlier on. And John McClure joins us from Reverend and the Makers, big Sheffield Wednesday fan, of course. Hello, John.
Hey, John.
Hey, up, lads, how are you?
Yeah, we're not too bad.
Not as well as you after that last week. Gosh.
Oh, my word. I'm still on ceiling, I have to be honest. Like an old fella said to me on the way out of the ground, this is the best match that's ever been Aylesbury in 150 years. So I think, you know, that level, I think.
It was just one of the maddest nights of football ever, wasn't it? I mean, we were on the show with Glenn Moore, who's a fellow Wednesdayite, he's a comedian, and he was on stage that night doing a gig, and there was really nothing down for you. And then Charlie was one of the few people who said, you never know. You know, they can, you know, Peterborough think they've got it. You get a couple of early goals. But I joined it at 70 minutes. When it got to 3-0, I think there was a mass switch on. Everybody turned over from the other games. And then it took to about the 96th minute to get the equaliser, didn't it?
Oh, I mean, obviously, you couldn't have wrote it better. I mean, obviously, Liam Palmer, he's come through youth system. He went to League One playoff final in 2005 at Cardiff with his dad. come through the ranks, score with the last kick of the game. I mean, you know, it's real kind of high-end drama stuff, isn't it? And obviously, we go, with season ticket holders, we go to as many away matches as we can. And my little lad with me on way home, he said, "Daddy, I'm so glad I could share that moment with you."
Oh, that's lovely.
Oh, I couldn't see the road for crying. Pull my car up. Just like unbelievable. And obviously, this sort of Wembley experience that none of us thought were possible. I mean, going to the match in and of itself is an act of faith, isn't it? Because you, by going, you must believe in some way. But I was very pessimistic going in. I went to Peterborough. We were last ones to leave stadium, 4-0. We're on the floor, you know. And then to turn it round, and then obviously ice cold in Pens, we're going to really savour every moment of this Wembley experience, because I think, you know, like anything in life, when you don't think it's going to happen and then suddenly you're gifted it, you feel like a lottery winner, don't you?
When did it turn into belief that it was going to happen?
Was it 3-0?
No, not really, because there was this awful moment going into sort of injury time. They were wasting a lot of time. Sort of, I think they had a bit of possession. We'd not really threatened their goal in the last few minutes. And there was a sort of resignation sitting in. There's a lad who sits next to me. They call him Louis. He's hilarious, this boy. He's gone out at stadium. We thought he'd left. And when we scored fourth, he's come back in. I said, "Where were you?" He said, "Just pacing up and down corridors." He said, "I felt so sick that we would come so close." So I think when Palmer scored, it was like, and even when they scored in extra time, we still had that kind of feeling, oh, you know, we could still get back in this. But I think a lot of credit has to go to Moore. They reckon he were pumping crowd noise into training ground.
Really?
Which is genius when you think about it. Obviously, League One, you're playing in like a lot of the time in relatively quiet environments. Uh-huh. Maybe not so much at Hillsborough, but like you're certainly not playing in that febrile atmosphere week in, week out. And he's been on.
He's gone.
We lost John there.
Lost John there. He'll be back in a second, won't he?
We'll try and get him back. His line's just dropped.
I bet people did leave because they thought you don't want to be there for the end of that, do you? You know?
So there's been quite a clamour for tickets, obviously, isn't there?
Yeah, well, it will be, won't there?
So I take it John's got one.
This is the when you go, you know, when it's Sheffield Wednesday v Barnsley, you sort of do go, why is it in London? a little bit, don't you? You know, could have played that.
Probably could have played that. A Wembley playoff, though. It's worse when it's. I think we got John back. His line just dropped. So, John, I'll take it. We're just saying, I'll take it you've got a ticket for the final.
I have, but like everyone and the nanan's been texting me, like, "John, I don't suppose there's any chance you can get me a ticket." So, obviously, I'm crying for like fight off at population of Sheffield. I'm trying to get a ticket for. But I think the club, in fairness, handled it really well because they've obviously had a deluge of support and phone calls. But it just goes to evidence, you know, we aren't laying it on too thick. Wednesday, third tier of football. I reckon they could get near to selling Wembley out completely on their own, you know, such as the extended fan base. Yeah, it's insane. I mean, when we played all 2016, I think we sold out straight away off the ground. We could have probably filled all the empty seats in the Hull End. And it's a real like community of people who've been starved of quality football for a long time. And I'm hoping this can be start a sort of general upturn in his fortunes, really, because we deserve it. It's been a long time coming, you know.
Yeah. Well, Joe Elliott wants the derby back, so he's going to be cheering you on as a Blades fan.
I could hear Joe Elliott last night. I live not too far away from Bramall Lane. I could hear him, which, you know, listen, as a fan of a Sheffield Football Club, to play the stadium must be a dream come true. But I just wish it didn't have to be at Bramall Lane. We don't want to hear that.
But you've just had a very successful tour, haven't you? Heatwave for your new album, Heatwave in the cold north.
Yeah,
and you're going out again. Great. You're going out again, aren't you? With an acoustic, and you're taking out unsigned bands and stuff with you, aren't you?
Yeah, I've got four every night. We're trying to keep. It's like a little kind of me trying to give back to the unsigned scene a bit, where I came from, really. So we've got four unsigned bands every night, 11 quid to get in. We're playing virtually everywhere. It's a lot smaller, obviously, than as normal gigs. But it's nice. It's a bit more intimate. I can have a natter when I'm on acoustic and stuff.
Yeah.
And that's great. And then later on, we've got festivals. We do a big festival in Sheffield called Tramlines, and it's right next to the Sheffield Wednesday ground in the park there. We use the corporate boxes as a dressing room, so that's as near as we're going to get to Joe Elliott and his Bramall Lane.
You and Self Esteem could set it out, I reckon.
Well, listen, she's smashing it. You know, we've got a little WhatsApp group, Wednesday Musicians, obviously Arctic Monkeys and Pulp, the Raytons, who were recently number one on Wednesday Heights. Bring Me the Horizon, who were in arenas there, Wednesday Heights. So, you know, there's enough musicians, I think, to do do a little thing. I mean, it's obviously the dream of every Wednesday fan to do the kind of Oasis at Main Road.
Oh, he's gone again. It's because he said Oasis.
Yeah, we had a Noel on earlier. We've got to get him back because he's got to play Celebrity Combination.
Maybe he don't want to play the knock. Maybe he keeps putting his phone down. He's like, oh, I'll play the lock.
Yeah.
And he's knocking the lock already. He's knocking the lock already by putting his phone down every 2 seconds.
Knocking the lock.
Absolutely.
We're going to try and get him back.
We're going to get him back. Do you think we're going to? He's back. Here he is.
We're going to try and get him back in a second because the lock awaits. We're going to bring you a little bit more on that Wolves story very, very shortly.
That's good. It's good. Is he there? Have we got him?
He's back. Sorry, we are struggling a bit with the line. So what we're going to do, we're going to get you to play a Celebrity Combination Lock. Here we go.
Fantastic.
Welcome to Celebrity Combination Lock with your hosts, Paul Hawkesby and lock keeper, Charlie Baker.
Yes, it's a simple game, John. It's basically we're going to ask you to guess four numbers. Our producer this week, Jamie, has locked his gym kit in the locker. Can't get it out. Can't remember the four digits. He needs some help.
It's absolutely stinking.
It's rank in there, fetid. Lots of people have tried it. Chloe Pett's comedian, Mike Fenton Stevens, Stephen Grant, Omid Jalili, Jarl F. Reagan, Jack Whitehall gave it a crack.
Yeah, gave it a good game.
The best so far, Kevin Day, Crystal Palace supporting comedian, who got two correct numbers, both in the correct place.
Yes.
And the four numbers he went for were 1497.
There's only one rule, John, which is don't knock the lock.
Yeah, do not. I don't expect for 1 minute John would knock the lock.
No, not me, lad. Yeah. Not me.
So 1497, two of those numbers are in the right place. So as you guess your four numbers, think of 1497 and keep a couple of those in the right place. Take it away, John. What do you reckon?
I'm going to go 4397.
4397. There we go. Let's put those into the computer. Here we go.
Here we go.
4397.
Okay. Okay, let's see, Charlie. Putting those
in
the lock.
Putting them in the lock.
Yeah.
The lock has not been knocked, so that's good news, isn't it? Here we go.
What a shame.
So close.
How many did John get right, though?
One.
And how many in the right place?
One.
Okay, well, one of them was right for the
who
next.
Knows what that was
for the next victim. Well, look, John, lovely to talk to you.
Disappointed you now, John.
And you boys.
We wish you well with the album. Enjoy the playoff. Have a great day. Thanks for joining us.
Take care, lads. All the best.
Cheers, John. Thank you. Bye now.
There's John McClure there from Reverend and the Makers. Yeah, their new album, Heatwave in the Cold.
Follow him on Twitter. He's absolutely great on Twitter. Really engages with the fans. But also, he turns up to people's houses sometimes with a guitar after a gig and plays another gig.
Fans of the band, not just randomly.
Not just some old lady. You know.
Who is it?
It's
3 o'clock in the morning.
John McClure.
From Reverend and the... Oh, I don't know. I'm sorry, Reverend. It's a bit late. I'll come and see you at the church tomorrow.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
I'm sure many of you are just thinking, look, please, I've got other things to do today. I do need to hear the remaining three themes from Richard Stilgoe's Daytime Quiz Finders Keepers. We brought you 1982.
Yeah.
For some reason, between 1981, 1982 and 1983, they changed the theme tune. Some shows had the same... You know, they wouldn't do that for Dad's
years.
Army, did they?
For years. Same,
are you being served? You know, theme tunes, you know, the Chase Point, they don't change their theme tunes every year, do they? So we brought you 1982, so we're going out of sequence now.
Maybe they kept losing it.
Yeah, it could be. They probably did.
Oh, we've lost
somebody
it.
Nicked it.
Oh, we've
somebody
lost
found
it.
1982s in the street, so they'd do another one. Let's bring you 1981,
yes,
the theme
please.
Tune from Finders Keepers. Seriously.
A pattern of five squares. A pattern of four squares. A pattern of three squares. Two patterns of two squares. Three patterns of one square. All add up to Finders Keepers.
Sounds like a Frank Sidebottom song.
What was it? A pattern of... What did he want?
A pattern of five squares.
Yeah, and then what was it? A pattern of two squares.
I can't remember. Don't get involved, Charlie. That was 1981. That was quite strange. The Frank Sidebottom years.
That was good.
1983. Now, this is 1980. You've had 1982.
Someone's listened to that one and gone, I don't think that one's quite right.
No, this is 1983. Here we go.
It's a bit Kelly, Night Rider. Danny Kelly on a Sunday night.
It's a bit Night
Trans
Rider.
Trans Euro Express.
I'd like expect Danny on Sunday night to play all the theme tunes from Finders. It is, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, this is Finders Keepers.
It's a bit sort of German, isn't it?
Finders Keepers. Someone's...
It's like orchestral manoeuvres messing about in the studio, isn't it?
I think someone at the BBC
a couple
at the
of cans
had a synthesizer pulled in.
Let's take you up to 1984/85. For some reason they did it as a football season. okay, here we go. This is the last... I promise this is the last one. We won't bother you anymore.
It was a banger. Yes, please.
Finders Keepers, lose keepers. Finders Keepers,
oh, yeah, square.
Finders Keepers, use
key change. Bit of a quick key change, isn't it? Not quite a mid-late more key change. Good. Well, there we are. You're up to date. Paul Somerville likes Billy Joel. Who's Paul Somerville? In relation to Jimmy.
There's five squares in five squares. Yes.
Don't let it bother you, Charlie. You won't be able to sleep tonight.
Two squares in... What was it? Anyway, find a keeper, Paul. We're going to we've worked that out.
No,
that's
got
a good
you've
idea.
You've got another one of your terrible
like
ideas.
Like battleships, you have to find, you know.
Yeah, that's right. You've learnt D7. D7, yes, David D7. Seaman. Well done. That's a terrible idea.
It's a good idea. People can call in for that, Paul.
What about this?
Yes, hello, Paul. I'd like to go C3.
You've got a good story, I understand, from the world of Finders Keepers.
My brother found... This isn't me. This is Roy from Cornwall. I'll do it in his voice. I don't know if he's from Cornwall or like originally
he's moved
from
there.
Cornwall.
You're going to take a chance there and just do it in the Cornish accent. Okay.
My brother found £20 on a dance floor in the late 80s. He treated me and another mate all night. Then he realised when we were getting a taxi home, it was his money on the dance floor. And I said to Tindall, the train don't stop in Campbell on Thursday. Thank you, Roy.
You've gone very Cornwall. This is Daniel the Gutted Gooner, and it doesn't, he just says, here, but it's almost like, it's very weird. Here, okay. He says, IA was at a dog thing in the middle of Martin Clunes Field. Where's Martin Clunes Field? And as I loved him in Men Behaving Badly, I was thinking, how am I going to get my selfie with him even close to him?
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
Then bang, my time came. I seen a fiver fall out his pocket. I just got to it before so. Now, that's how it ends. So we don't know if he got to it before it fell and he
you
gave it to
it
Martin.
You said it was offensive me doing the Cornish accent of that man.
I wasn't doing an accent there. I was just reading it as it was. But thank you, Daniel, for that. But we don't know what happened. Did you give him Martin Clunes' fiver back or should he come looking for you still?
There we are. We'll never know. Apparently,
and where's Martin Clunes'
apparently
field?
Neil Buchanan did a 90s kids show called Finders Keepers. Can we find the theme tune for that, please?
No. Well, let's hope they didn't change it four times. I think we've all had enough of that.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
Well, Hawksby and Charlie Baker here on TalkSport. I found it on the floor. I found it on the floor. Yes. Charlie Baker's core subject of the day.
Yeah, lovely.
It's mainly been money in the Big Sam envelope. Big Sam found a fiver on the touchline at the weekend at West Ham. So we're asking for your stories.
Yeah, when I was a paperboy, I was doing my round, which took me past a local pub. As I was walking along, I noticed a £20 note. I was thrilled. As I carried on walking, I found another 10, and a little further, another 20. Total 50 quid.
Oh, yeah,
we worked that out.
Was that like a maths question?
Thank you, Dad. It's GCSE maths.
Hopefully not GCSE.
Well,
maybe Rishi's right if that's a GCSE question.
If I lost 25, how much did I have left?
Mm.
Now, that was a month's wage. Thank you, Danny. Lovely.
Yeah, beautiful. Thank you very much for that. It doesn't have to be money. You could have found something else.
Yeah, what else did you find?
What else happened in Martin Clunes Field? Come on, Daniel. Come back and tell us what happened.
The thing is, Martin Clunes Field would get commissioned, Paul. He could go
just
in.
Just Martin Clunes in and walking around a field. Coming up, Martin continues walking round his field. 9 PM ITV. So, Martin, what's the idea? It's just basically me walking round a field.
I've got this field.
Yeah. But it's not much to it. But yeah, but I was in Doc Martin. Yeah, well, go on, fair enough.
Go on, off you
go.
Yeah,
do what you like, mate. Anyway, that's how telly works. We move now to the World Watercress Eating
Champion. Yes, of course.
It's amazing. He's won it for the 15th year in a row. He ate 85 grams of the peppery plant, according to The Sun. And his name is Glenn Walsh. Good afternoon, Glenn.
Hey, Glenn.
Hi, guys. How you doing?
Yeah, good, thank you.
I mean, 15 years.
Wow.
You're like pep. I mean, it's amazing, isn't it? I mean, what's the secret? When the other competitors turn up to take you on fruitlessly every year, why do you beat them? What do you do differently? Or is that a bit like Colonel Sanders? You can't tell me.
Well, a bit of a secret, but I mean, if you're competitive, you're competitive, you know. So it's good to be number one at something. I mean, I played rugby for years, you know, and put my heart and soul into it, but obviously didn't make the grade there, but I can eat salad quick.
Yeah. What are the rules, Glenn? What are the
laws or rules?
Laws
in rugby, aren't they?
Yeah.
To be honest, I mean, all you've got to do is you've got a bag of watercress, you've got a bottle of water there, and literally, you know, get it down your neck as quick as possible.
Yeah.
Wash it down with a bit of water. So, I mean, it's not that hard, really.
Do you put small amounts of cress in, then take a sip? Or do you put quite a lot of cress in and take
all in?
What's your technique?
Because I've got a big mouth and big hands, I think it's like big handfuls and shove it in. And, you know, like I said, swallow it as quick as you can, really. But like I say, it all depends on each year. Sometimes, I mean, this year was slightly a bit stalkier, but, you know, it does take a bit long because it does catch you in the back of the throat. And plus, it's really, really peppery as well.
Yeah.
So I always feel sorry for Roger Black, who was sort of perennially silver medal, wasn't he?
Yeah.
When Michael Johnson won everything in the 400 metres.
Yeah.
And if you were a great spin bowler at the time of Shane Warne, you know, you always second. Is there a second in the world at cress eating that always turns up, Glenn, and always goes home empty-handed?
It's a good old mate of mine. We played rugby together for years. It's Sam Batho. I mean, he had the record a few years ago, quite a few years ago now. He wasn't about for a few years, but he's come back the last couple of years. And when he stood by me, it actually gives you that incentive. When you think, oh, there's no one really doing a good time, you tend to relax a bit because it does hurt the throat a little bit. Like I said, it's very spicy.
Yeah.
And a lot of people say, what's it like? And I said, well, you know, you said before you don't like watercress. I said, well, I don't mind it. Mm. It's like, say, it's more like a condiment. If you put in a ham sandwich, it's lovely.
You're lovely, yeah.
It's like a bit of mustard. If you put a little bit of mustard on a ham sandwich, it's lovely. You try and eat the whole jar in one go.
That's a good idea.
That's the world mustard eating championship.
I'd watch that.
That's a different discipline entirely.
If it was for an eating contest, I'd definitely go for it.
Yeah. Well, so you ate 85 grams, and I can't quite picture how much that is, in 31.29 seconds.
That's right, yes.
But it was well short of your record. Your record's 25.5, so you were well off the record.
It was 25. I mean, last year, it was really tender cress, the first lot last year. I don't know whether it's anything to do with the colder spring this year or whatever, but
Talking a bit technical.
They've had all the timings done properly this year because they keep promising to put it in the Guinness Book of Records. But this year, apparently, it's supposed to go in. So, I'm looking forward to that.
So is it supplied by the same, I'm saying, farmer, market gardener each year?
They've got the Oxford Watercress Company there. It's renowned. Renowned around the world, aren't they? So,
yeah.
Well, it's superfood.
Glenn, I fancy giving it a go. Maybe next year I'll come down.
I'll tell you what. I mean, you get so many people coming down thinking it's easy. Oh, it's a bit of salad. It's a good bit of fun, you know.
Yeah.
I said, you know, I always go for a few beers beforehand. I mean, I said this year, went for Guinness, watercress, more beer afterwards, and then a kebab later on.
Lovely.
And after all that spiciness. Let's put it this way, I wasn't constipated in the morning anyway.
Okay. Hold the salad on the kebab, was it?
That's right. All the salads? No, you're all right, mate.
Just none of the salads, mate.
Chris?
I had a bottom like a dragon's nostril in the morning. Okay. Anyway.
Maybe we'll
leave that one in, Paul. That's all right.
It's lovely to talk to you, Glenn. We'll catch up with you for years.
Good man, Glenn.
Lovely to speak to you.
There we are. Glenn Walsh there, the winner of the world. Crest Heating Championship. Man with a lovely turn of phrase.
Beautiful. You've been to the hot dogs, is it, Paul? Hot dogs?
The World Hot Dog. I've been to the Coney Island, yeah. It was on my bucket list. It's sensational. I want to go to the Egremont Crab Fair next. That's somewhere else. Which they have the World Gurning Championships.
Oh, I'd like to see when they have that is another event
I want to take in.
Like a horse's collar, yeah, sure.
So that's right. That's the plan. No, it is actually one, Charlie.
Oh, right.
That's one.
It's not like one. Okay, sure.
Now, we've been bringing you stories of stuff you found on the floor. Really, I know we have, because it's a reason for that sport wise. Because, I mean, actually, it's not the worst thing we've done today. We played all four versions of a daytime quiz show's theme tune. So it's not even a close season yet.
I feel like I've dragged it down a bit.
You definitely have. I mean,
Daniel, the Arsenal fan.
Wasn't starting at a particularly high point, was it?
Daniel, the Arsenal fan, got in touch, didn't he, Paul, with a story.
He said he was in Martin Clunes Field, which has become a separate show that Martin's going to get away.
Yeah, lovely.
And he wanted to go and meet him because he loved him in Men Behaving Badly.
Yeah.
And just as he was approaching him for a selfie and say how much he admired his work, Doc Martin, not so much. I don't know if he was going to say that. But he just approached him and a fiver flew out of Martin Clune's pocket.
Yeah.
And Daniel said, I got there just in time to pick it up, so... And then that was
it. We don't know how it ended.
We lost him.
We don't know how it ended.
Daniel's called in to put us all out of our misery. Hiya, Daniel.
Hiya, how are you?
Yeah, we're good, thanks, Daniel. So you left us, Martin Clunes, you pick up the fiver, and we weren't sure whether you gave it back to him or you...
To get the selfie, or you said, I'll pay you a fiver for a selfie, and it was his own fiver.
He doesn't need a fiver. Nice. But so what happened, right, Daniel?
Basically, the fiver fell out of his pocket, and I thought, there's my time, I can go and get it. Just as another chap was about to pick it up, I sort of swooped in and stole it off the floor before he got there.
Wow.
And I went straight up to Martin and said, Martin, you've just dropped the fiver, but you can have it back as soon as you let me have a selfie.
Ah.
We had a selfie and we had a little chat about Men Behaving Badly for 5 minutes.
Oh, that's lovely, nice.
Isn't it? As exciting as you thought.
Well, I like it.
I like the story. Yeah. You were very honest in it.
It's nice, Daniel. It worked out, because it might have been that you were going to give him the fiver back and he said something like, don't bother me. I mean, he's not that sort of bloke, I guess. Yeah, I don't think he's...
But
like
he was
that.
In his field. So I think if you're in someone's field,
yeah.
If he's... Well, go on.
There was a dog show going on in his field. I couldn't tell you where it was to, but it was a big dog show.
Oh, brilliant.
Martin Clunes' field. I couldn't tell you where it's to. I can't remember.
Oh, you know.
Brilliant.
Nice.
Daniel, thank you.
Thank you, Daniel.
I barely would have slept tonight. I don't know about you. But it's great that Daniel's cleared that up. We know what happened with Martin Clunes. He's a good man.
Good man, Daniel.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
Did you know Bob is related to Sir Guy Bubka, the famous pole vaulter?
Is he really? In distance. In a distant way or close cousins?
Well, I think he's a sort of distant cousin, yeah.
Wow.
But they are related. Bob looked into it. I think he's met him once as well.
Oh,
it's amazing, isn't it?
Amazing. Yeah. Amazing. Like that. You ever done the pole vault, Paul?
No. Our school, before people were given a proper bendy pole, they knew what they were doing. They wouldn't let any wick just get hold of a bendy pole because it costs a lot of money.
How do you start?
Well, it was basically like a scaffold pole.
It can't be scaffolded.
Yeah, and it was a lad I went to school with. The only one who was any good, Kevin Mack, was the only one who was any good at it.
Oh, yeah.
He was, you know, he played in the football team and stuff. He was pretty sporty. And all of us basically just sort of slammed our chins into the scaffold pole.
Yeah, lovely.
But Kev could do it. He was the only one who was any good. So I think he became the school pole vaulter. And then he moved on. Having done it with a scaffold pole, they move him onto a bendy pole then to work on the technique.
Yeah. How do you get it through customs and all that? Do they come apart?
Yeah, it's like a little snooker cue or something. In a case.
Is it? Have your own case?
I take it they bring. How do you get it through customs?
How do you get it on the plane and that sort of thing? They come apart in bare and bits, are they?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
I don't know if they are. I feel like that would defeat the object. I feel like it would.
Well, you can't carry a 15-foot pole about.
I bet they do
in a case. You're probably right, Charlie.
Tubes on the top of a van. Honestly, you've seen them.
I don't know what I'm talking about. No, I think I've proved that over the years.
If anyone's an expert, give us a ring.
Tell us. The
Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
I was picking up, not literally, a piano for free off the Freecycle website.
Oh, nice. Yeah, lovely.
This is from Rowan, West Ham fan in Northern Ireland. When we got home with it, we found an envelope stuffed with £1,000. Does that make it a grand piano, he says?
Nice.
In the Goldstein book.
Nice joke.
We did the right thing, got in touch with the previous owner. Apparently, his girlfriend had a habit of hiding money around the house and forgot it was there. He gave me £20 as a thank you. Oh, what's the tariff? Oh, see, that's quite awkward, isn't it? So the bloke says, I found £1,000 in your piano. And thanks ever so much, mate. How much do you give? What would be fair?
Nothing.
For £1,000? Nothing.
Nothing.
You wouldn't give anything.
You've sold as seen. Buyer beware.
Oh, something like that.
Seller beware.
So you're not giving it back?
Not a penny back.
Okay.
Not a penny back, Paul.
Were you to be of... I mean, you've proven that already today with that £50. So, but were you to give it back, what would you expect? Would you expect more than £20 for a grand? Would you expect £50?
I think £50 is a good reward for £1,000, do you?
Yeah.
What percentage are you giving there?
Yeah, 20.
5%. I mean,
look, £20 is a...
Finder's fee.
Yeah. You'd be a bit put out, wouldn't you?
He said, do you know there's £1,000 in your piano? He said, no, but you, I'm it, and I'll play it.
Of course he did.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
Ben from Langley Park in Durham. Fantastic. Prefab Sprout and all that. When we were teenagers, my mate and I didn't have a lot of money. I was over the moon to find a tenner outside the local Chinese takeaway. I saw my best mate Richie a couple of days later, and he said he was gutted because he'd lost a tenner outside the local Chinese takeaway a couple of nights before. That was 35 years ago, he says. Okay. 35 years ago. And
what are you putting inflation at, Paul, over 35 years?
Okay, let's have a look. I've worked it out for you, okay. Ben. He says, I still haven't come clean that it was me who found the tenner. And listening to you now, I feel bad. So I'm going to pop round his house at the weekend and put it right. Excluding inflation, obviously. Well, Ben, I've looked it up. According to the Bank of England, a tenner 35 years ago, £23.07.
Oh, I think you can run to that.
You can stretch to
and
that.
A Chinese takeaway.
Yeah,
why not? Every time that bloke's gone past that Chinese takeaway, he's gone. For the last 30 years, that's where I lost that tenner.
Yeah, and he sat there and he just kept his mouth shut. He said, oh, no, it must have been a real blow to you.
Yeah,
that would have been worth £23.07 now.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
There we are. That was this afternoon's show.
Lovely show.
We're back again tomorrow with Andy Jacobs. Charlie, you're back on Thursday.
See you Thursday, Paul. Looking
and you'll
to
be,
it.
We have the birthday spread, won't we?
Yeah, definitely.
Look forward to that.
Good mood about it.
Thank you very much for listening this afternoon. Do hope you can join myself and Andy from 1 tomorrow. If not, the podcast, as always, will be available around 4.
You've been listening to the Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast. Hear the guys every weekday between 1 and 4 p.m. on TalkSport.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.